What it do, Hardwood Knocks listeners? I am Dan Favalli, coming at you to continue our division preview train. We got to keep that a rolling. We're going to be moving on to the Central Division today. This is once again going to be a two-part podcast. Part one has the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Chicago Bulls. Part two will be published tomorrow. That'll be a Friday. It will have the Bucks, Pacers, and Pistons. I'm excited to bring on Lazarus Jackson. He is a Blue Wire podcast host himself for Pistons versus Everybody, a podcast that will be launching imminently. So be sure to check that out. He's also an editor and podcast host for the Detroit Bad Boys, the SB Nation's Pistons coverage site. Follow him on Twitter. He's a fantastic follow at Laz Chance, at LazChance. That's at LazChance. You can follow Andy, my co-host, on Twitter at Andrew D. Bailey, spelled like it sounds. I am at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. Follow the show at Hardwood Knox, once again, spelled exactly as it sounds. Also, please continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on Twitter. We really appreciate seeing the ratings and reviews go up. If there's something more you want to see from us during the season, any suggestions, hosts that you want to see, guests, something like that, we are being aggressive in trying new things this year. So hit us up in the review section. Definitely leave us that rating. And again, if this is your first time here, subscribe. We promise that you won't regret it. If you've already done all those things, please, recommendations, shout outs on Twitter, steal people's phones and subscribe them to the Hardwood Knox podcast. They will thank you in due time. Lastly, but certainly not leastly, please remember to follow Blue Wire on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. You can check out all my fire tweets over there in addition to all the other podcasts that we have to offer. With all the housekeeping notes out of the way, we get to part one of our Central Division preview with Lazarus Jackson. What it do, Hardwood Knox listeners? I am Dan Favalli, coming at you without my co-host, Andrew D. Bailey. As we continue to plunge through our division previews, though, I'm super excited to be joined by Lazarus Jackson. As I mentioned in our intro, he is a podcast host for Blue Wire, the Pistons versus Everybody podcast. He is also an editor and a podcast host for the Detroit Bad Boys over at SB Nation. And you can follow him on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. We're going to be talking about the Central Division today. I'm again excited to have Laz on here as a fellow Blue Wire podcaster now, but also to really just get into all these, I guess, mediocre teams that are in this division. But first and foremost,
that hurts a little bit.
But first and foremost, how are you doing?
I am doing well, Dan. Thank you for having me. I'm super grateful because this got me the follow back from Andy. So like that's always much appreciated. But yeah, let's talk about the Central Division.
No, actually, first let's talk about Injustice, where you have been in my timeline for years, retweeted onto it, I guess, at least over the past two seasons, to the point that I thought I followed you. And then when I went to reach out to you, I realized I did not follow you. And so I finally followed you, which is, you know, getting a follow from me really doesn't mean anything. If anything, it's worse for you.
No, that felt good. I got the little dopamine rush when like anyone follows you and it's like, oh, hey, wait, I recognize that guy. Like, ooh.
Maybe it's just because if you don't lose a follower or something, that's like, oh, I didn't lose followers today, but you should. My follow doesn't mean anything. It was just an injustice that I wasn't following you already.
No, I've been slowly like ticking up. And so like each follow counts. Don't sell yourself short, Dan.
Well, this is going to be a long podcast then. So we're going to go in reverse record order as always for our listeners. I've changed the preview setup up a little bit for listeners who care about that just because we're just going super long on the other ones. Laz has been kind enough to say he's going to do all five teams with me, so I'm super excited. We'll see how many we get to and whether I have to split it up into two parts. But the categories are going to be a little bit different, but relatively the same. I wanted to provide the opportunity to just go deeper into certain things so that this didn't feel too cookie cutter, even though that's kind of how division previews sort of have to go, at least over here. We will begin, though, with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who won a whopping 19 games to go with 63 losses last season. They made a lot of changes, I guess, or at least additions over the summer. Their notable ones include Darius Garland, Dylan Windler, and Kevin Porter Jr. Their notable exits include Channing Frye, David Nwaba, J.R. Smith, Marquise Chris, and Nick Stauskas. We're doing this category called Fast Four. Laz, do you have just anything you want to throw out here? Any observations, thoughts, big picture questions that you have about this team? Where do you want to start?
So first, I want to start by saying I think that's the first time that Marquise Chris has ever been called notable on a podcast.
I didn't know their offseason was so uneventful on the free agency margins that he had to be included in there.
No, definitely. But when I look at this team, the biggest thing that stands out to me is like, okay, so they're going youth. They're going for a youth movement. They've hired a brand new coach in John Beilein. That's Beilein is from Michigan, and so I have familiarity with him. He's heavily into player development. Like, I think that's really good for them. But at the same time, like, the big question, what do they want for Kevin Love, and like, what do they get for Kevin Love? Like, when you look at the roster, the thing that they're missing, quote unquote, is like a really young complimentary big man to go with their young complimentary guards and the wings that they drafted this year. Unless you're like a really big Ante Zizic fan.
I can assure you, like, I am not.
But yeah, but it's like, okay, so Kevin Love, like which young big can they find that a team is like willing to part with for a guy of Kevin Love's caliber? Like that's the biggest question for me. Like, we've heard the Kevin Love to Portland has been rumored forever, but like Portland doesn't have that big guy that like Cleveland wants, you know? And you know, Portland's up to their eyes in tax money right now anyway. So like, you think about like a Sacramento, right? Like, would he fit there? Could you package like a Harry Giles or something like that? But like, even then, like that, I think that'd be tough salary wise, considering, you know, what they just gave Dwayne Dedman and what they're probably going to give Buddy Hield. And so I was like, yeah, well, what are they going to do on the Kevin Love front, and how quickly does that happen?
And my guess would be that he does get traded unless his contract just becomes immovable. His 4-year, $120.4 million extension kicks in this season, dealt with injuries last year. If he just looks absolutely terrible and no one wants him, but even if he's really good, it's kind of like you said, it's tough to find a fit. Portland's been floated around out there. They have salary filler, and I don't know if they would give up Zach Collins for him, but that would be, they definitely wouldn't give up Simons for him. That seems pretty given, but maybe a future pick.
Yeah, and Cleveland wouldn't even like want Simons, right? Like, they're too busy on their own guys.
That's right. Yeah, you have Garland, you have all the guards, basically. I can't even go through naming them. One of mine for this team is just, you mentioned that John Beilein's emphasis is player development. Were you taken aback at all that this is the team that hired a 66-year-old head coach, or that this is the time that he made the jump to the NBA? I was just a little confused by it.
So it's funny because like, he had been rumored to be like in the Pistons plans prior to this. And like, that didn't come together after Stan Van Gundy was fired. And so it was a little surprising that he left the college game at all. Like, you don't normally see like first time NBA head coaches that are over the age of 65, like, if we're just being honest. But no, I think this is a really good fit. And more to the point, I think this is somebody that Dan Gilbert has probably had his eye on for quite some time, as like a big guy, businessman in the state of Michigan. He's probably like been very familiar with like the work of John Beilein. And like, this fits. Like, there's nobody else on the coaching market that I was like, oh, Cleveland like should have gotten that guy instead, right? Like, there's no Memphis hired like Taylor Jenkins, and I was like, who? And so it's like, could they have made like their Taylor Jenkins hire? Like, sure, but like, I know who John Beilein is, and like, I know he's a damn good coach, and so like, if that's the direction they want to go all in on advancing their young guys' development, especially from the guard position, then like, I think that's something worth trying. Absolutely. Like, you got to remember, like, John Beilein turned Trey Burke into like the Naismith Player of the Year, but he was like still Trey Burke. Like, that's a damn good coaching job, if we're being honest. I can say as a Michigan State fan, when I got the news that John Beilein was no longer going to be at Michigan, I was ecstatic. That tells you everything you need to know.
Well, and it makes sense too, and this would leak into what one of my other just observations and inquiries into this team will be, is if you're going to move forward with this roster, you have those guards to where if he's going to specialize in the offensive development of these guards, you you need it, is basically as I stutter through these words, just with Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Kevin Porter, Jordan Clarkson, you don't really need to develop, but you've kind of been dealt this hand, even with Dylan Windler, if you want to see more ball handling from him, you've been dealt this hand where you have playmakers, but none of them classify as just these primary setup men for others. And so who is that going to be on this roster is going to be a huge part of this job, and also just a concern for me. I think the three names that come up the most are going to be Garland, Sexton, and Porter Jr. And it's probably between Sexton and Garland. I don't think anyone's going to look at Kevin Porter Jr. and say, you know, that's the guy who should be running the offense in the half court. He might be the best shot creator of the three, but just looking at it as a table setter, I just don't know if they're going to find that level of playmaking in any of the current backcourt prospects that are on their roster.
Well, one of my things, if we're just going to like run through this, is like one of my things is something that our Blue Wire co-host podcast in arms brother, Justin Rowan from the Chasedown Pod was on at Media Day. It was like, actually, how tall is Kevin Porter Jr.? Because if he's 6'7" and he can guard threes, like all of a sudden he's not, you don't have to supplant him to play like Garland and Sexton together. You can play all those three guys like alongside each other and not maybe like lose as much defensively in the long run. And like that could be pretty big for them, honestly, like to have a shot creation from the wing and from Sexton, and then having kind of Garland in more of the play finisher role, but as like a really deadly spot up shooter from who can shoot it from like out to 28 feet. Like that would be really good for them. That would be, I think that's a good setup for them while Garland like learns how to run an NBA pick and roll and stuff.
It could kind of be, maybe it would be the same sort of theory as Portland, but on steroids, where now, you know, their backcourt with McCollum and Lillard. Lillard is a better playmaker than any of these guards on the roster, but you've just kind of overloaded opposing defenses with guys who can create their own shot and handle the ball. And McCollum isn't the best setup man either, but to have that is big for Portland and is a huge reason why they've overachieved relative to their over-unders over the past couple of years, it seemed. And so I guess if Cleveland kind of moves forward with that methodology, but almost expands it to where we're just going to have three guys who are comfortable operating on the ball and go that way, you're right. If Porter Jr. is able to hang, I won't even say physically, but vertically with guys at the three,
yeah,
that could end up being huge for them.
Well, even a guy, you know, like Portland added like Rodney Hood, right? Like that is another guy who is, you know, 6'7", 6'6", and can create his own shot and will play at times with both of those shorter like lead guards. But like having multiple people on the floor who can create their own shots is like still a good thing.
What else you got for this team?
The Brandon Knight redemption tour. Brandon Knight, yeah, Brandon Knight's a dude that I've always kind of had my eye on. He was a lottery pick for the Pistons way back when, and I enjoyed his time, even if I always kind of like knew he would never be like an amazing like NBA point guard. But he's been, you know, just plagued by injuries the last couple seasons. But apparently, like I've been keeping tabs on him. He killed his summer workouts. He was named the co-MVP of the Remy runs. The Miami-based trainer Stanley Remy has a series of 5-on-5s with various NBA players, and he and Deion Waiters were named like co-MVPs of the summer. Like that, maybe that means nothing. Maybe that bodes well before a team like Cleveland. You know, I you would hope that that's a positive rather than anything else. And yeah, like he's just a good dude, and he can be probably like a veteran leader who's not actually like old and decrepit, but like still useful for a Cleveland team that's like, you know, probably going to like leverage a lot of their youth and inexperience. And so like I'll be rooting for Brandon Knight. I'll be curious to see how he's doing. And you know, he's only got one more year in this contract. So like, you know, if he plays well this year, maybe he won't get the contract extension he got last time, but like he'll be a useful veteran backup point guard piece for someone down the road.
I just, for him to get to that point, behind the scenes, he doesn't need to play to have value as a mentor to these kids. Where's his playing time coming from, though, would just be my question. When they're overloaded with guards, you have, you know, we already talk about Garland, Porter, Colin Sexton. You have Jordan Clarkson. Matthew Dellavedova is there. And so even if you get minutes with Kevin Porter at the three, I just wonder where Brandon Knight's playing time is going to come from.
No, yeah, that's definitely a fair concern. I think they will probably end up trading one of these guys, right? Like,
they have so many expirings that I would say they'll almost definitely something would be brewing, but they're also so close to the tax. I have them within $3 million, and I probably actually need to update that sheet a little bit. So it's not a matter of, hey, we can take back more salary, but if they're willing to take on longer term salary, maybe that's even a little bit cheaper than the contracts of Tristan Thompson at 18.5 million. Knight is 15.6. Clarkson's 13.4. Maybe that's their path. I mean, they have Dellavedova and Henson are expiring too. They just have a ton of expiring contracts right now.
No, absolutely.
Do you have anything else on this team before we move on to our forced categories, I'll call them?
No, so the last thing was actually the question of what they're going to do with all that expiring money. If they keep all of it, if they, you know, decide to eat the tax or only trade one of the guys we just mentioned who's an expiring, what will they do with their insane amount of cap space in 2020 free agency? Like, will they try and be players in restricted free agency? Will they, go the process route and try and trade for long-term bad salary and draft assets to rebuild that way? I'll just be curious to see how they choose to leverage the threat of that cap space in the future.
If there's going to be a team that maxes Jaylen Brown out of Boston, it's going to be them.
Yeah. I agree with that take. Yes.
That's what I could see them doing with the cap space. Since we've kind of already talked about biggest questions, do you have what is your just the one single solitary biggest question or concern or anything you're monitoring entering this season for the Cavs?
Is Chetty the guy that we thought he could be last year? Because if he is, you don't need to max Jaylen Brown, right? Like, you have him on the wing, and then your rotation is the two guards, Sexton and Garland, KPJ, Chetty, and then a big. You got to find the big. Wendler comes off the bench, but you switch off between KPJ and Chetty on the wing, and you play five out, up tempo new age 2017 plus new NBA basketball, right? But if Chetty can't play, or if he has the year offensively that he had last year, maybe he's not as big a factor in the team's long term plans as was initially thought. Maybe you do go out and max a Jaylen Brown or something. Maybe you you do go out and offer Pascal Siakam and see what he wants. You attack some other restricted free agents a little bit more aggressively, knowing that you have a hole on the wing that won't be filled by the likes of Dylan Windler.
Yeah, I've always kind of viewed him as just more of a four. I feel like he'd be better suited there defensively, even though there are a lot of numbers that wouldn't even support that. What might
he would need to get a little bit bigger, wouldn't he?
He just doesn't seem quick enough to go after truer threes, and so it would be. I guess it would vary by matchup. Then, what might help him though, if you can trust the passing of one of the many guards that they have now, is you probably don't want to saddle him with too much ball handling responsibility. And now that you have Kevin Porter Jr. in there to go with Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, you can even get league average passing for them. His job on the offensive end in the half court transition, whatever, gets a whole lot easier.
Definitely.
Who do you, or rather, excuse me, will this team grade out higher on the defensive end or the offensive end? This feels like a very softball question.
Yeah, no, this team is going to be a better offensive team than they're going to be a defensive team, because rookies don't know how to play defense. Kids don't know how to play defense. That's basically it. They were literally one of the worst defensive teams of all time last season.
117.7 points per 100 possessions is what they gave up per cleaning the glass, filtering out garbage time. Dead last in the league by a mile.
By 2/100ths of a, what,
2.5 points per 100. Yeah. That's a huge gap. Yeah.
That's a lot of points.
And I wonder, is there a team that could be worse defensively than them this year? I think a lot of people have come back to Charlotte, but I actually think that they have some defensive talent on the roster unless they start selling off a lot of these guys, MKG, Batum, Dwayne Bacon.
Zeller.
Yeah, so I would be hesitant to pick them. Maybe the Knicks would be a potential pick. Some people have mentioned the Hawks. it's just tough for me, especially if we get to a point where the Cavs are playing Kevin Love a majority of his minutes at center. It's just tough for me to imagine a team that's going to be worse than the Cavaliers on the defensive end.
No, I totally agree. This team is going to be so young and play so many and be so bad in like dribble and containing dribble penetration. And like they also don't have any bigs who protect the rim. So it's just like an avalanche of defensive breakdowns. Like, this team's going to be really bad defensively. Fun to watch.
Well, I was going to say, here's a hard question. Who's their best perimeter defender?
Oh.
Is it honestly Larry Nance?
it might be. Oh, my God.
Which is wild.
Early Bird Rights has Sindarius Thornwell somewhere on the roster. Him, maybe. That guy.
Yeah, oh my gosh. moving on to something that might be a little bit more kinder, who would be your breakout candidate? Just the guy that's going to go boom this season for you. Who's most likely to do that on this roster?
Yeah, I think it's Brandon Knight. Honestly, when I look at guys who on this roster who I would like actually trust to run the offense behind the rookies, like it's not Matthew Dellavedova, who like despite his improved shot, still can't like ever actually get to the rim. It's not Jordan Clarkson, who I would not trust to run like an ice cream stand. It's Brandon Knight. And so I think Brandon Knight, I don't think he's going to score like 20 points a game or anything crazy like that. But again, I think he's just going to reestablish and remind people of what he's capable of at an NBA level. And like, from a breakout candidate status category standpoint, I think that's more interesting than just being like, oh, like Colin Sexton is going to win like first team all rookie. Like, okay, sure. Or Darius Garland's going to win first team all rookie. Like, okay, sure. Like the rookie class this year, it's not great.
Maybe Dellavedova would be their best perimeter defender now that you mentioned him. I don't know. That's still a tough question. And so Brandon Knight's interesting. I'm very intrigued about your takes on Brandon Knight for the team. My pick, it's almost by default, but I would go with Colin Sexton. I was just really impressed with how his shot selection kind of improved as he went on last year. And then the degree to which he was shooting threes by the end of the year, his volume went up. He shot a very high clip from downtown, at least relative to what everyone was expecting. I know his job gets a little bit more complicated because of the other ball handlers they're putting around him, but maybe that allows him to explore the catch and shoot role a little bit more. And I don't know that he's ever going to be a good defender, but if he's at a point where he improves a little bit as a passer, but he's able to just maintain his offensive efficiency while playing both on or off the ball, that ends up being a huge win for Cleveland.
No, definitely. And I think the major improvements will have to come from him as a passer. He improved as the year went on, but he mostly improved as a shooter. He turned the ball over a ton, but like rookies turn the ball over a ton. But, you know, if you're going to be in a dual lead guard like role with another guy, like both of you need to be good passers. Like, I think Garland can be a good passer. Like, I'm less certain about that for Sexton. And so he needs to improve as a passer for me to really think about him in that way.
Garland by far has got to have the highest or most point guardy, for lack of better phrasing, potential of the bunch, right? He's of those three. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, Sexton for a good part of the season was flirting with 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, which is, you know, not great. Every guy looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. But there's one problem. Guys keep buying generic off-the-rack suits. That's why Blue Wire is pumped to partner with Indochino for an amazing deal on a new suit. Indochino is the world's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Looking to get married? They have tons of options for those looking to outfit their wedding party. It's so easy to get started. Visit a stylist at one of Indochino's 40 showrooms in North America and have them take your measurements personally, or measure yourself at home and shop online at Indochino.com. This week, Hardwood Knox listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $369 at Indochino.com when entering BlueWire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BlueWire for any premium suit, and it'll cost you just $369 to go along with free shipping. This is an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, Indochino promises you won't go back. Who's their strongest year-end award candidate on this team?
So I think it's Beeline for Coach of the Year. Like, I don't...
Oh boy, I'm ready for this.
None of these guys are going to be MVP. None of them are going to be in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation, right? Like, no one's going to make an all-in. Well, I mean, if Kevin Love stays there all year and, like, averages 30 and is completely healthy, like, maybe he could make an all-NBA team. But, like, I don't think that's – I don't think he's averaging 30, and I don't think he's going to be on the team the whole year. So that makes that part difficult. You know, maybe Garland or KPJ makes an all-rookie team, but, like, that's not – really in the spirit of the question.
Yeah, and I wasn't even including all NBA teams, although that would be a good, if you wanted to throw Kevin Love in there, that'd probably be a good workaround.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, I think the closest thing they have to, like, a year-end award candidate is Beeline for Coach of the Year. And that would, in that scenario, is, like, they win, like, just under 40 games and scare the hell out of somebody, and the kid guards are much, much more advanced than anyone expects of them. And then they scare the hell out of some, like, Eastern Conference, like, lower tier playoff seeds.
I wonder how many wins they have to get for him to be in the Coach of the Year running.
It would have to be like 38 or 39. And
wow, that would be a mad monster overachievement by them. My pick is kind of another default one. To me, you have to go with a Rookie of the Year selection, and the one I gravitate towards is Kevin Porter Jr. There were people who would have taken him in the lottery. He in a lot of mock drafts leading up to the draft, he was there. You already have John Beeline gushing about him in training camp, and you know, high-level shot creators, if they're making them, can really stand out in these, you know, Rookie of the Year races. And so if they just give him the green light and they don't put a leash on him and he's logging a healthy number of minutes and just comes out as a more efficient scorer than we expected, maybe he's someone who could enter that running. I want to make it clear, I do not expect it in the least, but that would be his path to entering the Rookie of the Year conversation.
That would be so Cleveland to have the guy they got at 30 be better than the guy they got at 4.
Yeah, it would be. Darius Garland just coming off the injury, I would be reticent to say that it'll be him, but I mean, maybe it could be. I think Zion's obviously the overwhelming favorite, but New Orleans is just so deep that if his production or even his role or playing time just gets a little bit lost in the jumble, that it could open the door for someone. So we'll see if any surprises. If anyone from Cleveland enters that race, though, it'll be a huge surprise. Do you have an offbeat lineup that you really want to see from them?
So I want to see Sexton, Garland, Kevin Porter Jr., Dylan Windler, and Kevin Love all on the floor at the same time. I want to see them score like 120 points per 100 possessions and give up like 135 points per 100 possessions. Like, I just want to, like, if you're going to be bad, be entertaining. That's what I want to see. And that lineup's going to score points, and points are entertaining.
I'm kind of with you. I made this change because you were mentioning the Kevin Porter Jr. looks like he's 6'7 or something. I want to see that exact lineup. I want to see that exact lineup, but I would pull Kevin Love and put Jetty Osman at the 5, and then let's really roll. You're not going to rebound anything, but you'll be a mismatch.
No one's going to miss shots. You don't need to rebound.
Look, all I'm saying is, after you buy out Tristan Thompson, after you trade Kevin Love, that's the lineup you just go with. That becomes a staple. That's all I'm hoping for.
Ante Zizic's agent is so mad at you right now.
God, does he even have an agent, I think is the real question. This one, another softball. Who's a player you think is most likely to be traded? Maybe it's not, because they do have a lot of expirings.
It's probably Kevin Love.
Yeah, I want to say him too, but I'm almost just like, where and for what? Is there a suitor you can come up with? Sacramento, to me, would be tough because you have Deadman, Bagley, Harrison Barnes, and Ariza are probably better off at the forward this stage of their career anyway. Is there a team other than Portland that you look at and say, you know, Kevin Love could be good there?
What if they traded him for like John Collins and like Solomon Hill's salary and some other stuff to make that work, just to give Trey like even more spacing?
Well, Collins can kind of exploit his 3-point shot already. My guess would be the Hawks would shoot that down very quickly.
That's fair.
Maybe the Heat, they seem like a team that they just want stars. So if you're willing to unload Kevin Love for, let's say, like a I don't even know their pick commitments. This, my offseason mode is still there. They have pick commitments up the wazoo, but if you give them a distant first rounder just to go with your salary filler for Kevin Love, maybe that's something like, they're interested in.
Yeah, like Kelly Olynyk and like James Johnson and some stuff, maybe. I don't know if I would do that if I was Cleveland.
Only they could bring Deion Waiters back. The Deion Waiters return.
Yes. Let's do that.
You could even go. I don't know if they want to start Justice Winslow at point guard, or maybe they've made a Chris Paul trade as well, and then you trade Goran Dragic if he's not moved as part of the Chris Paul trade, although my guess would be that he is. You definitely don't give up Tyler Hero in that situation, nor do the Cavaliers need another guard.
Maybe Myers Leonard is he's an expiring contract at this point, right?
I think him and Olynyk, that could, I mean, that's at that point though, Olynyk's actually good. But I mean, Bam Adebayo and Kevin Love in your front court for Olynyk and Leonard, and then a distant pick. That's intriguing, and seems like kind of like a Heat move.
I don't hate that. They are fairly desperate.
I'm gonna say Kevin Love as well, just because it's impossible for me to say which expiring contract they would move, just because they're not close enough to the tax to where they need to dip under it. So you can look at a contract like maybe Brandon Knight or Tristan Thompson and say they're just gonna default to the most expensive one. And yet they're not far enough under it to say that they're going to take on a ton of salary. So Kevin Love is just my pick as well, especially because, too, if you look at these expirings, I don't know how much value cap space has in Cleveland, particularly when you don't already have established high-end veterans there, but they're slated to have, like, two max slots next summer. And so if you don't want to compromise that, you hold on to those contracts and let them come off the books.
Definitely.
Where do you think they'll land in the East?
Okay, so just roll it back a little bit. So before we started the show, I told you that I answered these questions not by team, but by question. And so like I have a number for each other team, but for Cleveland, I just wrote down bad. So they're going to be bad. I don't know if that's 15th in the conference. I don't know if that's 14th in the conference. They're going to be bad. We'll say that much.
I think 15th is probably the right answer. Which team might be worse than them? I think I can only come up with the Knicks, maybe the Wizards if they trade Bradley Beal or shut him down at some point.
Yeah, if the Wizards trade Bradley Beal, they will be worse than Cleveland. That's the scenario I can see.
Do you have a bold prediction for this team?
My bold prediction for the Cleveland Cavaliers is that when they strike out on Jaylen Brown in restricted free agency, they go really, really hard after Malik Beasley. And that is a huge, and that will be a huge win for them.
I like that. I like that thinking. I just wonder, now you're just left with kind of like another fringe wing type. If he just shows this year he can defend the hell out of threes, then that's fine. But he's a super interesting player that I think a lot of people are still sort of sleeping on. I like that one.
People are asleep on Malik Beasley, and they need not to be.
My bold prediction, and I already have to retract, I think, one or two of the ones I made in the other podcasts. I've already like started thinking about things that make me sort of demerit those. So take these with a grain of salt. I'm going to just say that the Cavaliers do not have the worst record in the Eastern Conference this season.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm not at the... this will be called Knicks shaming by people, I'm sure. It's not necessarily the Knicks, but the Wizards are just in a very precarious situation, even if Bradley Beal plays out of his mind. Because one, let's even say they don't trade him, he better not be in a situation where he's going to lead the league in total minutes for a team that's not going to make the playoffs.
You know? Yeah, and if I was him, like, I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, dude, he's had two kids. He deserves a little bit of a break. 3,028 minutes is absolutely absurd in today's load management drunk NBA. That's just absolutely absurd.
Like last year for Bradley Beal, I understood because like, okay, I'm trying to make all NBA. I'm trying to get the Supermax extension. And then like 2 years down the road, like demand a trade. And so I get the best of both worlds. Like now he was non-committal during media day about the possibility of a Supermax extension. And so it's just like, it's like a running back holding out in the NFL. Like I'm not putting these miles on my body for nothing. Like let's just like end this really quickly, shall we?
Yeah. And it's for both parts because look, the goal for him to play that much would be that he qualifies for the Supermax and then that lets you keep him longer because I'll be floored if he signs that 3-year, $111 million extension, just because it makes so much more sense for him to wait. He has talked about how he could retire now and be fine, which I get. And when you're dealing with money on this scale, you know, we tend to probably over-exaggerate how much the differences in cash mean, but 111 over 3 years versus 253.8 over five is a huge difference.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
So if the goal for playing him that much would be for him to qualify for that so that you can then re-up him for those 5 years. But if you're the Wizards, you can't pay him that money after paying John Wall. And frankly, if you're Bradley Beal, you shouldn't want to commit the next 5 years of your career, really six if you include the following season still left of his deal, to a team that's been mediocre for most of the time that you've been there, verging on now bad. And so
you can always get your money now and get traded later.
That's also fair, but I don't know. He might be, there has yet to be a supermax that looks good. I guess if you want to kind of count Steph Curry. Yeah. And Beal is
James Harden.
Yeah. All right. That's fair too. I also will argue that Damian Lillard's is sort of fine because he signed the 4 year one and not the 5 year one.
And he'll be what, like 35 by the end of that? That's not 34 terrible.
34 was that?
Yeah, his game will age gracefully.
Well, the thing about Beal, though, is so that he's entering his age 26 season. And so you're right that his contract would probably be eminently more movable than a lot of these other guys on Supermaxes. That being said, from a Wizards standpoint, I do think it would be tougher to move him where you're not going to get as much value because people are going to look at the back end of that deal and be like, so we're giving up how many picks so we could pay Bradley Beal $58 million in year five of his extension. So, this is now we're really away.
Yeah. I was just going to say this is a Wizards podcast somehow.
Yeah. So my prediction is, and it's just subject to change before the start of the season, is that there's going to be a team in the Eastern Conference that's worse than the Cavaliers. And I kind of think it'll be the Wizards, if only because they seem most likely out of anyone to flagrantly tank if they get the opportunity.
I like it.
That brings us to the Chicago Bulls. They were 22-60 last season. They do look kind of sort of vastly different. Some notable additions for them: Kobe White, Daniel Gafford, Luke Kornet, Thaddeus Young, Thomas Satoransky, one of my favorite signings of the summer. Notable exits: Robin Lopez, Timothy Luau-Cabarro, Wayne Selden, and Walter Lemon Jr. They did re-sign Ryan Arcidiacono as well. They also re-signed and then got rid of Shaquille Harrison. That was just a very weird situation. But starting with them, what do you have on your fast forward? What are you looking at when you're thinking of this team?
If Jim Boylan makes Wendell Carter post up 15 times a game like it's 1992, I'm going to throw a remote through my television. Free that man. That man deserves better.
Can I take it one step further and say if I see them post up Lauri Markkanen again late in the shot clock, I'm going to be fuming as well because that became a thing last season.
Like, at least that, like, I sort of understand that because he is not an amazing passer. And so, like, if you just isolate him on, like, the right side of the floor, like, you can expect a half-decent offensive result. But, like, Wendell Carter can't create his own shot at this point in his career. He needs to be running DHOs. He needs to be running the passing game for the elbow. He needs to be in pick and rolls with that actual, like, half-decent guards that the Bulls have. Like, he needs to be rim running. He needs to be shooting threes. Like, he needs to be Al Horford. He does not need to be Robin Lopez, which apparently Jim Boylan thought it was Robin Lopez. And it infuriated me for the entirety of the second half of the season.
And it definitely affected him because he was, again, I'm only choppering in for a few Bulls games at a time, but he was catching the ball and just not even looking at the hoop. That's the point that it reached with him. And, you know, look, to Boylan's credit, he said that they're going to play faster because they have Kobe White to go with.
Everyone says they're going to play faster in the preseason.
Well, but you can't get away with playing like you did last year now, just because you have Kobe White, you have Satoransky, you have Otto Porter. I do think they will play faster and we'll see a cut down on the post-ups. I don't know if Wendell Carter Jr. is going to flourish, though. That's certainly something to monitor with this team, just because either way they play, I don't know how much it sort of suits him. You know, he can't create his own shot, but he's a great passer. But how much time do you want to allocate to him kind of working on the block? Will they actually let him up his three-point volume? That's probably a bigger issue. So his long-term fit there, that's one of the things I'm monitoring too. A lot of people were sort of down with Lauri Markkanen last year. He was sort of up and down after coming back from his injury. He looked like he was sort of burnt out following that, what was it, 80 overtime game with the Hawks, 90 overtime game, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So... But Wendell Carter Jr. to me is just the bigger concern because of how little confidence and tangible fit it seemed like he had on once Boylan took over.
Like, yeah, there is a distinct possibility that like 3 years of Jim Boylan just like alters Wendell Carter Jr.'s career in a meaningfully negative way, and like that will be a tragedy.
There, I think it was Max Carlin on Twitter suggested a Jaylen Brown for Wendell Carter Jr. swap, which makes a ton of sense for both sides if the Bulls aren't scared about paying Jaylen.
Oh, I like that a lot. I would be super mad at all the Boston people, though.
Yeah, me too. It would be, and it's they lose Al Horford.
And just replace him with like 15 years younger Al Horford. Yeah. God, so annoying.
When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. No matter where you're selling, be it Amazon, Etsy, your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. And right now, Hardwood Knox listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customers. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in BLUE, B-L-U-E. That's ShipStation.com, and enter promo code BLUE. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen. What else you got for this team?
So, Thomas Satoransky is a guy you mentioned as loving their offseason edition of. I need to personally take a closer/better look at him. He has never been a guy that blew me away, and so I was astounded by the positive accolades that the Bulls got for signing him. I was astounded that on my end, I'm a Pistons guy, so many Pistons fans were like advocating for this guy. To me, like, he was the guy who like the coaching staff wanted Ty Lawson to play over in the playoffs, and so I was like, why does everybody love this guy? And so I, you know, you look at his numbers and like I kind of get it, but like, is he a spreadsheet superstar, or like, is he actually like a legitimately good NBA player? That is a question I have to answer for myself, not necessarily for the rest of the league. But I think that, you know, in a larger sense, with a larger role in Chicago, and, you know, honestly, with a higher profile than the moribund Washington Wizards, we'll get a better sense of like what kind of player Thomas Satoransky is for the league as a whole.
Well, there's certainly a chance that he ends up being exposed, I guess you could call it, in obviously a different setting, but also probably in a larger role when you look at who are the Bulls going to turn to while they're sort of grooming Coby White to be their primary playmaker. He's going to have to carry a little bit more responsibility. My knock on him has kind of always just been he needs to be more aggressive looking for his own shot. But when you look at how he can play off the ball, he spent a lot of time in lineups that had John Wall, lineups that had Bradley Beal on the ball as well. That's always just having that plug and play fit on offense is huge. And then when he works with the ball in his hands, he just has like sort of a nice change of pace to his game once he gets into the lane. And it's sort of marginalized by the fact that, again, I think he needs to be more aggressive looking for his own shot at times. But to get that from someone who, at least in Washington, was not your primary initiator, it feels like he's this good layover where he can run second unit heavy lineups. He can sort of be the plug and play, a starter if you need him to be. And then he can play with Zach LaVine and Coby White at the same time if they really wanted to. He's 6'8", and he can defend kind of okay off the ball. He's not going to, you know, stop anyone really on an island, though. That's why I like him. And also the money, 4 years and $40 million, I think it was. 3 years and $30 million, excuse me. It just seems like that's around mid-level money now when you look at what the mid-level exception is going for. And so I like that. And it's just, especially for the Bulls who need that sort of holdover presence / someone who can play with other ball-dominant talents as they not only go through the Zach LaVine era, but also groom Coby White. On sort of a semi-related note, what the Wizards ended up getting for Satoransky and Porter in sum, it amounts to 3 second-round picks, I believe. Just terrible return. Look, we're back on the Wizards already. That's still mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, well, for me, it's like, again, like, I don't know. Like, I know Portis is, like, okay, but, like, I don't know how good Satoransky is. Like, would I trade, like, 2 seconds for Satoransky right now? Like, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how good he is.
My thought process was I absolutely would have paid him that money, and then you could have moved him in December. That's fair. And I thought he would have just been easily movable. Anything else that's really catching your eye with good old Chicago?
While we're talking about the guards, what are they going to do with Chris Dunn? That's a guy who was a top five pick not that long ago. He's a guy who, if I remember correctly, played much better with LaVine off the floor than with LaVine on the floor. So he's a guy who's more comfortable with the ball in his hands, but like he's one of those guys where he's not good enough at an NBA level to have the ball in his hands all the time. But I think if he's willing to accept a smaller role and he's willing to be traded to a team that could use him, I think there's a guy in there. I think there's a useful NBA role player along the lines of a worse version of a Patrick Beverley and inside of Chris Dunn. And so, you know, what do they end up doing with him? Do they just not play him? Do they trade him? Do they cut him? Like, I'm curious to see where he ends up.
Yeah, it's interesting there, too, because obviously the reflexive answer is trade him because, well, he's going to be a restricted free agent. But that assumes that you're going to get value for him. And so if you can't even get a second-round pick for him at this point, it might make sense just to let his salary come off the books. There are some tantalizing defensive combinations, though, they can come up with this year. You look at maybe lineups of, let's say, Dunn, Satoransky, Wendell Carter Jr., Thaddeus Young, and Otto Porter. That seems like it could be a pretty good defensive lineup. Satoransky would be clearly the weakest link in there. Early on, we won't even get a feel for it because if they become invested in Kobe White and you want to play Thomas Satoransky, there's not going to be a ton of minutes for Chris Dunn available unless they're just completely out on Denzel Valentin at this point.
Yeah. And the emphasis they gave Kobe White led me to believe that he's just more in the front office's plans and the coaching staff's plans than a Chris Dunn.
And I guess you could start moving these guys up. You know, if Satoransky can maybe lock some time, because the Bulls don't really have wings, which is that's one of the things for me is how much three is Thaddeus Young going to have to play, and will we get to lineups where we see Otto Porter at the four? I think those are all critical. Thaddeus Young is best off at the four. I wouldn't be opposed, particularly when you look at Chicago's backup center situation of having front courts of him and Lauri Markkanen as your four and five, where they're just a little bit interchangeable on offense and defense. You have Thaddeus Young maybe defend some fives, and then Markkanen can be the guy down low a little bit, or you play five out on offense in that situation. But can you get to those types of lineups when you have Porter, Markkanen, and Young in the same rotation? It just seems like someone's going to be playing out of, I can't say out of position, because Markkanen will play the four and Porter is kind of a three, but where does that leave Thaddeus Young? How much he will get time at the four, but how much time is he going to have to spend at the three because Chicago's wing rotation is so weak? And that's not a great position for him when you look at what he does for you on offense.
Yeah, I was thinking, this isn't my fourth thing, but I was just thinking, because of the strength that they have at, you know, backup big man in terms of playing Lauri Markkanen at the four and a five, playing Thaddeus Young at like as a straight four, playing like lineups where you can play like Cornette and another big man. Like I was thinking like Otto Porter is just like a straight three for them. Like I don't know how much you'll be able to see Otto Porter scaling up.
Yeah, he might even be in certain lineups if you want to play Mark and Young at the same time. You could probably get away with him at the two, or maybe that's something that's
We're gonna get there.
Oh boy. What is your fourth thing for this team?
My fourth thing is that I really liked the Daniel Gafford pick. He is someone who impressed me at Summer League. He is a guy that I hope the Pistons would have a chance at in the second round, but sadly he didn't fall that far. But a guy whose evaluations I really trust, Sam Vezzini, had Gafford as like a top 10 pick coming into the year, but a combination of like misuse of role and the lowered value that big men have in the draft, if you're not like a top five big, led him to kind of make a fall. And so like that is a guy that I have a lot of interest in. That is a guy who, if Boylan wanted to post up 15 times a game, like he could probably do it adequately. But like, again, that they just shouldn't do that because it's a bad idea. But like, I suspect that Boylan will like the brand of basketball that Daniel Gafford has to offer and be a fan of that. And so I'll be intrigued to see how he plays.
I like the spirit of the pick. And I'm not going to quibble over a decision that was made at number 38. However, when you're so short on wings or just switchy talents, why not go with like an Admiral Schofield or an Eric Paschal? That was my thought process going in for them. Or even maybe that was too early in theory to go after a Talon Horton Tucker, but that seemed like the player archetype that they should have been looking at just because they're so thin on the wings.
That's fair. I don't really think of Eric Paschal as a wing for
what
it's
worth. Well, he's like 6'9 and just a little bit more mobile is more just my point.
He can guard wings. I don't know if he's a wing offensively.
That's fair. Who do the Bulls have that can guard wings beside Otto? Well, Thaddeus Young, too.
Thaddeus Young.
Still, the spirit of the Schofield pick, or maybe even Talon Horton Tucker, again, not really a wing offensively. The spirit of the pick makes sense, though, and all your reasonings really hit there.
Yeah, thank you.
What's the biggest question, though, the biggest issue you're monitoring for this team entering next season?
Is Jim Boylan good at his job?
That's fair. It did seem, before you get into it, it did kind of seem that the locker room did a 180 on him last year because they were close to a mutiny, but then the leadership committee or whatever stopped it. That, first of all, every team needs a leadership committee, and we need to be privy to just intel to these leadership committees. But then all of a sudden it was Zach LaVine liked playing for him. It was weird.
It was like, it sounded like he needed the players to trust him, but was like operating like he already had their trust, like two games into his career as head coach. And it's like, no, you actually like have to earn our trust despite the fact that we're all kids. And then like, so like, okay, does he have the locker room? Like, sure. Let's say he does. It's like, then it's an open question of tactics. They allegedly want to play faster. Sure. We'll see how that goes. It's like, again, are you going to use your bigs as the hub of the offense in like post-up situations, like 12 feet from the basket, not as passers, as scorers? Like, that's going to be a problem. Like, what kind of lineups are you going to run? Are you going to run some, like, with your lack of wings, like, are you going to run some lineups where you slide like Porter up to the four or stuff? Or like, do you feel too vulnerable to even attempt something like that? What kind of use are you going to find for a guy with a unique profile like Tomas Satoransky, right? Like, Satoransky doesn't really fit into like a nice neat box, and Boylan appears to be a guy who likes nice neat boxes. And so like, how is that guy going to be used in the rotation? So like, I just have a lot of outstanding questions about how the job that Jim Boylan's going to do. Like, it is entirely possible that he's a good coach. It is entirely possible that like, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but until I see it, like I got some questions.
I don't blame you for that. Mine would be, will Zach LaVine hit the trade market this year? Is it a situation where you look at his age, and I don't think he runs counter to the timeline, but he's going to have, after this season, he's going to have 2 years and $39 million left on his contract. He is only 24 years old. He'll turn 25 in March. Could this be an opportunity for you to either get out from under that money without having to include a sweetener?
Wait, get out from under that money? He's underpaid.
At $19.5 million for Zach LaVine, no, per year.
Okay, yes, he's a really bad defender. But
And you can't really ask him to do stuff for other people with the ball in his hands. He did a lot better.
If Zach LaVine was a restricted free agent this year, he would get more than $19.5 million.
I don't know.
He'd be, what, the third best restricted free agent on the market, depending on how you feel about
summer,
like Buddy Hield?
I mean, there are going to be so few teams with cap space. I would actually argue he'd have been more likely to get more money this past summer as opposed to this coming summer.
Okay, I'm thinking about like in the abstract, like as a guy who like pretend
his,
that everyone.
I would say his contract definitely looks a lot better. And again, yes. He improved at getting to the rim. You can still trust him to knock down three-pointers. He had some really difficult shots. My main point was going to be, is this maybe an opportunity for them to sell high? I said, or get out from under it, maybe bad phrasing, without having to worry of taking back bad money or including something. I don't think you would have to. Will there be an opportunity to sell high? The logic there is just Otto Porter probably not going to opt out, but only has a year left on his deal after this. And then you don't really have guys making a ton of money. Lauri Markkanen will be extension eligible after this year. You're going to Wendell Carter Jr. will then be right behind him. You have Coby White, who you can you're not have to worry about paying down the line, but how much of a compliment can he be in the backcourt with Zach LaVine when you're looking at both of them playing defense? If there's an opportunity to sell high, I'm not saying they will actively look to move him. I'm just wondering if that opportunity will arise to trade Zach LaVine and if whether they'll take it or it'll be something that they actually think about taking when we're looking closer to the trade deadline.
Okay, that's fair. I like the phrasing a little bit better on sell high because I do think Zach LaVine is a useful NBA player and that the type of uses that he has is worth about or slightly more than what he is currently being paid.
Right, and if you said that the reason to trade him is not because of the money, so I'll make that yes. much clear. That is not that contract has not aged poorly at all, and he's not. If it was, you know, maybe if he was making like six, if he was maxed out, maybe. But even then, I don't think money would be the sole reason that you move him. It's just that if there's an opportunity to sell high on him, so that you can find someone who better suits what you're trying to build long term. I'm not saying that Coby White's going to end up being better than him. I just don't know what that backcourt looks like in the macro defensively. I can't imagine it's going to be very good.
You know, yeah, that's fair. And like what I was thinking was like Buddy Hield is probably going to make more than him in restricted free agency. And so, or on an extension. And it's like in that context, like I would rather have Zach LaVine than Buddy Hield.
Ooh, that's interesting. I don't know if I agree. It's definitely close. Buddy Hield is the better shooter. I would almost need to go through this season to see if the Kings let him do more as a ball. I mean, he can create his own shot a little bit too. Yeah, Buddy Hield's going to end up signing a contract though that might make me like him less. That's what I can say.
Yes, yes.
He is 26. Maybe he's 36. We honestly don't know, and that's something to factor in. LaVine is only 24. I think. Look, I'm a
Hield's game will age fairly well though.
Yeah, and I'm a sucker for shooting, particularly at that level.
And I'm a sucker for shot creation, and so we all have our biases.
Yeah, that's fair. That'll be interesting to compare what he gets to Zach LaVine's salary. Is he going to make more than $19.5 million in his per year in his next contract?
Yeah, that'll be an open question. Yeah.
Will this team grade out higher on the offensive end or the defensive end?
I think Chicago will grade out higher on the defensive end. Only because, like, when I look up and down this roster, I see two guys in LaVine and Markkanen who I trust to be engines offensively, and I see a lot of uncertainty otherwise.
I think I would tend to agree with you. A lot of that, though, bringing Thaddeus Young helps. He's always kind of a candidate to
very
make
much
an all
so.
Defense
yeah.
team. He might be yeah. He might be the most underrated help defender in the league, and they'll be even better. On that, and you have Otto Porter, which that's certainly going to help. I can't wait to see Wendell Carter Jr., Markin, and Porter play together. We didn't get to see that last year. It helps a ton for them, though, if Wendell Carter Jr. ends up being the defender he was supposed to be. He just didn't really look it as a rookie. And like you said, rookies are always going to have a tough time on the defensive end, but he just didn't look maybe – you could tell that the mobility
is
there.
He had flashes.
Yeah.
He had flashes, but that's all they were.
Yeah. Breakout candidate for this roster?
Denzel Valentine? No. I'll go with Gafford. I'll go with Gafford as a rookie, as a second round selection who's going to surprise people with how effective he is in the role that he's given. I'll go with Gafford.
That's probably a good pick because their backup center situation is just really cloudy.
Yeah, it's like, you're going to play Felicio instead? Like, I didn't think so.
I mean, you have Luke Kornet, but what are you going to do defensively when he's your five? Are you going to get to a point where you're comfortable putting Markkanen in at the five? I couldn't really come up with one. I was almost just going to default to Thomas Satoransky and say that he's going to have to carry just a heavier workload than people expect because maybe Coby White's just not ready or they're not inclined to give him the range just yet. I like your pick better, though, I think. Denzel Valentine would be great. I suggested that he could help the Bulls just because he was shooting really well before his ankle injury or whatever he had, and Bulls fans almost killed me on Twitter when I suggested that. They're just done with him, apparently. So
yeah, as a Michigan State guy, I am not allowed to say what I think about Denzel Valentine.
All right, I'll save that for off the air then. Strongest year-end award candidate on this team?
So I cheated on this one. I said Thad Young, all defensive team. He should have been an all defensive team member last year. He wasn't this year. I think he will play all at an all defensive level, and there will be more attention as to whether or not his snub last year. And so I think that is enough momentum to propel him onto an all defense team.
I kind of cheated just by going default and said Coby White, rookie of the year. It seems like the easier thing to do in this situation. A sneaky pick, though, might be, well, maybe not for you because you don't particularly like his game, but Thomas Satoransky, if he doesn't start and he's your sixth man and the Bulls are a little frisky and challenged for a playoff spot in the East, that might be a pretty good pick to consider here.
Would he score enough? Six man, they should really just rename six man to, the guy who scores the most off the bench award.
It should just be the Lou Williams and Jamal Crawford award.
Yeah. It honestly should be the Lou Williams award. That'd be kind of cool.
Thad Young for all defense, though. Allow it because I love the caveat in there. And you're right. It's just he's, especially if the Bulls end up being a relatively average defensive team, that's going to really buoy his reputation as well.
Yeah. If he helps Wendell Carter, like he helped Miles Turner last year, that'll definitely boost his case.
And I think the Pacers are going to, we'll get to them, but I think the
Pacers we'll get to them. Yeah.
Player most likely to betray. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Is there a lineup from this team that you're dying to see?
So let's get big on them. Let's see. Satoransky, Porter, Thad Young, Larry, Wendell Carter. Just huge. Just swarm everyone. Let Larry be the offensive guy. Let him run four or five pick and rolls with Wendell Carter. Let Otto Porter just stand in the corner and shoot threes. And just hold people to a 97 defensive rating. Just get big on him.
I'd be here for it. Mine went in the completely opposite direction. Put Thaddeus Young in at the five. Go with Otto Porter at the four. Then you use Thomas Satoransky and Zach LaVine as your two and three with Coby White at the one. If you're totally irreversibly concerned about defense in that lineup, you can pull Coby White for Chris Dunn because you will get enough playmaking from Satoransky and LaVine. But give me some Thaddeus Young small ball five.
That is the complete opposite of my lineup, but I'm digging it. I like it.
Boylan doesn't seem that he would embrace. He's far more likely to roll out yours than he would be mine.
Yes, he is.
Player most likely to be traded on the Bulls.
Cristiano Felicio. Please take our money, please.
He's owed $7.5 million after this season. So it's just basically a total of 2 years and 7 million right now.
That is, and it's $14 million worth of dead money.
Yeah, I just remember people defending that contract, and I was just even puzzled in the moment. They gave it to him the season after the salary cap boon too, as well, right? Wasn't that the summer of 2017 that
Didn't he shoot 40% from three for 2 weeks? And it was I guess that's why they did it. And it was just you were right. It was an overpay at the time, but we were debating how much of an overpay, and it turned out to be a lot of an overpay instead of just a little bit of an overpay.
Right. And the fact that if it was 2016, at least you could land on that. But it's the Knicks when they signed Tim Hardaway Jr. You gave out these contracts in 2017 when you knew what the lay of the land was going to be.
The Knicks were so concerned that he was going to re-sign with the Hawks.
Oh, can't get into that. That was one of the most brain-bendingly stupid just contract negotiations ever. That the Hawks were just nah, we're good. I think it was Lowe who later reported they weren't going to go higher than 4-48. And let's even assume that there was a $6 to $8 million cushion there or $10 million. The Knicks still blew that out of the water.
It was I'm glad about the trend this season of teams working out sign and trades for their restricted free agents so that we don't have stuff like that happen again.
This might be the hardest question of the bunch for this team. Where do you think the Bulls will land in the East?
Right now I have them 10th.
Out of playoffs. Interesting.
Solidly 10th. Solidly 10th.
Solidly 10th is kind of a backhanded compliment.
They are young and not great offensively. And I don't think they're ready for the playoffs quite yet, but they are definitely better than the bottom four or five teams in the East.
And that does make sense because you essentially then have to pick two teams to fall out of the Eastern Conference playoff race for them to make it, unless you think that there's a chance Miami missed the playoffs, and maybe you do. So, but if you get to a point where you have to pick more than one team to fall out of the Eastern Conference playoff picture, it gets tough because Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Boston, Indiana, Brooklyn all feel like locks. I would say Toronto's a lock unless they blow it up. And then that leaves the Magic and the Pistons, plus the Heat and the Bulls. I think those are the teams that end up vying for the playoff spots. It'll be tough to crack.
Yeah, did you mention the Pacers?
Yeah, I did in the first
round. Okay.
I have them as a playoff lock. Top six seeds from last year, I think, are locks, with the caveat that if Toronto decides to tear it down, maybe they're not.
Right.
So, and if you had to pick one of the non-playoff teams to make the postseason this year from the East,
it would be Miami.
Yeah, I think I'd go Miami over Chicago.
Yeah.
I'm going to say they finish ninth, though. I'm going to be an optimist. Just if something happens, they finish ninth. You're welcome, Chicago fans.
That just pushes Orlando further down the standings. I'm fine with that.
Boldish prediction for this team.
My bold prediction for this team this year is that Zach LaVine scores 25 points per game, gets quote-unquote snubbed from the All-Star game. He will not actually be a snub from the All-Star game. And that people are capital M mad, capital O online.
That he's snubbed, or that he's averaging so many points?
That he's snubbed despite the fact he's averaging so many points.
I mean, how bold is 25 after he just came off a 23.7 point per game season?
Well, the 25 isn't bold. The bold is that if he's averaging 25 for a big market team, that he's not going to make the All-Star game.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. That would send people into a tizzy. The boldest prediction that I'm going to have for this roster is that we're going to see Wendell Carter Jr. actually end up being a really good basketball player under Jim Boylan.
That's not bold for me. I love Wendell Carter Jr.
Under Jim Boylan.
That's fair.
I'm going to say that he emerges. He once again emerges as the Bulls' best prospect this season. And fair. So maybe that's a little between Markkanen and Kobe White. Maybe that's just a little too bold, but I really like Wendell Carter Jr. And I think this is predicated on him being able to explore more offensively. He needs to be able to shoot threes, and he can't be, not only does he need the green light, he can't be scared to shoot them. And then I'm just banking on the fact that if he's going to play with Thaddeus Young, as you said before, his defense, there's going to be a noticeable uptick there.
Yeah, I like that hot take so much that I wouldn't even call it a hot take. I just agree with that. That's a statement.
It's definitely going to be wrong, but that's just where I'm at with them.
If you're wrong, we need to free Wendell Carter.
That absolutely needs to happen. And they'll be, like we mentioned, the Boston-Jaylen Brown swap, assuming that won't be available if, let's say the Bulls hang on to Wendell. To sell Wendell Carter Jr. now would be, that'd be really early to do so. But I think there would be a lot of teams that would want to take a chance on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'll do it, Hardwood Knox listeners, for the first part of our Central Division preview. Please return tomorrow for part two, which will once again feature Lazarus Jackson. Again, follow him on Twitter at LazChance, when we'll be talking about the Indiana Pacers, Milwaukee Bucks, and Detroit Pistons. Until then, I leave everybody with a shout out to Kyle Anderson.